This case this morning is Killian versus Concert Health Plan, number 1112. Mr. Shannon.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a fairly simple case, even though it's going into its fifth year and it's got a very large record below. I do have one housekeeping matter to raise. In our reply brief, I cited the Weisenkamp case that was issued this year by the Seventh Circuit. Shortly after that brief was filed, that opinion was withdrawn. There was a petition for rehearing that was granted, and I believe it was last week that the court issued a revised opinion in Weisenkamp. I'm simply no longer relying on that case. We presented three issues in our brief. I'd like to address the last issue first briefly, and briefly the first issue and focus on the second issue involving breach of fiduciary duty. With respect to Mr. Killian's claim for statutory penalties, it had two components. The plan administrator failed to provide a summary plan description after a written request, and the plan administrator also failed to provide a copy of the group policy. The district court's opinion only addresses the failure to provide the summary plan description. It didn't provide anything about the failure to provide the group policy. And on top of that, the court tied the award for the failure to provide the summary plan description to the date that the group policy was provided. It just doesn't make sense, and it has not been addressed by the appellees. There has been no waiver of this issue, and there certainly wasn't any order by the district court restricting briefing to the summary plan description only. On the contrary, the court anticipated briefing with respect to the summary plan description and the group policy.
Is that what the court's order said?
That's what the court's order provided. It specifically, I've got that in my brief, it specifically permitted plaintiff to raise and brief the issue regarding the group policy also. With respect to our...
Which order was this in?
Judge, that was in the...
Is the court's order of July 6, 2010 talks only about the sufficiency of the summary plan description.
The court will give me a moment. The statute penalties.
Which suggests to me that the court...
When the court ruled on the motion for summary judgment, it says this does not affect the claim regarding the written request for the policy. That's record 289, page 24, at note 24. And prior to that, when the court was denied Royal Management's motion to dismiss, it stated that it's limiting Killian's claim for statutory penalties to his allegations concerning the SPD and the group policy. Again, the court only addressed the SPD. It did not address the group policy. And when it awarded penalties, it tied the penalty for the failure to produce the SPD to the date that the group policy was produced.
Right, and was the subsequent briefing, the supplemental briefing that the court ordered, did it address the policy, the failure to provide the group policy?
In our brief, on the first and second page, with respect, I'm quoting from our brief, with respect to the group insurance policy, this is after I pointed out the fact that we made a written request for both the summary plan description and the group policy. In our brief, I said, with respect to the basic plan document, the group insurance policy, the plan administrator initially said, we're not the plan administrator, and then it said, we don't have the group policy, and then it finally attached a copy of the group policy to its affidavit in support of its motion for summary judgment, contending that it was kept in the ordinary course of business. This is the document that they said they didn't have before. But we specifically identified it in our brief. As I pointed out in our reply brief, I've got the citation.
And you're saying there should be two separate penalties?
Absolutely.
Is it possible that he could conflate them or referring to them together somehow?
Well, I think they were conflated because...
Is that wrong? Can't do that?
No. Certainly you can't say I'm giving you an... You certainly can't say I'm going to award penalties of $10 per day for the failure to produce the group policy, and that penalty phase will end... I'm sorry, the failure to produce the summary plan description, and then tie that penalty to the date that the group policy was produced.
If it's never produced, is that open-ended?
I believe it is open-ended until the date of judgment.
I see.
I mean, that's certainly not a defense for a request for a copy of the document to say, we never created it. We breached our fiduciary duty. We didn't comply with ERISA. We didn't create a summary plan description.
Is that something that requires a remand or redetermination, or is that something we could do here?
That could be something you could do here, although we also take the position that the court was... misunderstood the facts, where it said Killian had all of the documents that he needed in order to determine coverage. That's simply not the case. There was never a summary plan description, and there was never a list of providers.
Is there a summary plan description?
There is not a summary plan description, contrary to the representation in Concert's brief, where they alleged that the district court concluded that the group policy and an item called the EBS, or the Employee Benefit Summary, together created the summary plan description.
Yeah, I read that. Does the record, the physical record, contain the summary plan description?
No, it does not. It's got some documents with the defendants claimed constituted a summary plan description read together, but the district court rejected that claim, and there has been no cross appeal.
With respect to the list of preferred providers, whatever you want to call them, does the record reflect whether at any time your clients received that list?
No, my clients never received the list. In fact, there's no evidence that they exist except for the testimony that a couple of copies were provided to the employer. We have never seen a list of network providers.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, that gives you a segue into your argument with respect to the your first contention, does it not?
That's correct. One of our main points...
I'm very puzzled about the state of the record with respect to this first contention.
I'm sorry?
I'm very puzzled about the state of the record with respect to this first contention.
In what respect?
Well, did the district court misapprehend your argument?
I think the district court certainly did. From day one, we were pointing out that there was no evidence in the record to show that any provider is in or out of network. I can't tell you as I sit here today of any provider that is in or out of this network. I don't know how to determine that. We've got a huge record.
What do you think is the consequences of that? Assuming that you are correct and the district court misapprehended the state of the record.
Well, then we're getting into my second point. We've got a breach of fiduciary duty.
Do you have to... Let's stay with your first claim with respect to reimbursement or monetary damages. If he misapprehended the state of the record, what are the implications with respect to your claim for monetary damages?
Well, our claim for benefits, I think that would have to be remanded, and I don't know what this plan administrator or the entity that is actually reviewing claims is going to have before them to determine whether or not Rush University, for example, is in or out of network.
So your argument, as I understand it, would be the board decided your case on a misapprehension of the record. They can't decide it on that basis. They've got to go back and take another look at your benefits determination.
Well, I think they've got to take another look, and I don't know what they're going to do on remand. I suspect on remand they're going to say Rush is not part of the PHCS network, but the PHCS network is not identified in the plan document. It refers to a completely different network called the Select Provider Network, which I now understand they're claiming that capitalized Select provider capitalized network means the network that you have selected.
Right. It's not the name of a network. It is an instruction to the participant to select a network.
Well, I think that's what they're claiming, but that's a very strange use of capital letters. And here you've got a long plan document with many definitions, and it doesn't have anything that says select all in caps, provider network in caps, refers to whatever provider you've selected. In any event, there is still no reference in the plan document to the PHCS network. The EBS, which has the reference to the PHCS network, says on its face you cannot rely on this document. And under AMRA, it is unenforceable. I'm out of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Farivar?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court and Counsel. My name is Paul Farivar. I represent one of the appellees, Concert Health Plan. And we're here essentially on the three counts that counsel had just mentioned. As it pertains to Concert, the main issue is what was just brought by Your Honor in terms of this network issue. Essentially, what they're seeking, and it's a very important issue here because they're seeking to have the bills paid to the extent it's covered in the plan. And if that's what they're trying to do, how is it that they're going to remedy that? And that's a very poignant question because if you look at the remedies that they're seeking, and this is something from day one we've been trying to determine what it is that they want. Under 1132A1B, it would be an enforcement or clarification of the rights. Under 1132A3, it would be a reinstatement. And this is a very important issue because what we're dealing with in this case is very distinct and different from the cases that are relied upon by appellant. We do not have a situation here where we have coverage at issue, coverage for a procedure or a termination of benefits. What we have here is a question of what is and is out of network. And the record indicates that the decision made by appellant, by plaintiff here, to seek the care that they intended that was ultimately out of network was made on their own. Nothing was done by Concert or the defendants to lead them to make that decision. Nothing was reviewed and nothing was done to make that decision.
You have those two phone calls to the number you provided on your card, and in those two phone calls taken together, it's clear that your people knew they were at Rush, and these were the people who told people whether they were in or out of network, and they weren't told they were out of network.
There's two issues here, and that's a very good point that distinguishes this case from Bowerman, Anweiler, and also the Kenseth case. The call that was made at the hospital at least 3 days after the decision was made to see the provider in question. The decision made to see the provider in question was made because of the plaintiff's prior history with that doctor, not because it was in or out of network. Now, the calls that are made on the card, there's one side that leads to participation. And the call that ultimately was where there was a connection made was regarding certification. When you make that call, you're just making a determination to certify the care, to ensure that it is something that was necessary, for example. And we're not arguing that in this case. We believe that it was necessary. Concert is not in the business of making a decision for who a provider wants to see. We don't do that, and we can't do that. We can't say if somebody wants to see someone out of network, that's their decision.
Is it out of network? Is this the same thing as a preferred provider?
There's preferred providers that are in network. You can say the select network, however you want to say it. It's who has been selected by. There's different networks that are selected by the participants, and the ones that are out of network are simply ones that they've decided to see on their own and will pay the consequence.
Well, if they want to see it on their own, it happens to be a preferred provider. That would be good.
It would be good for the patient.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, if they want to see someone in network, then they are under the contract of CONSER. We have control to determine what they can balance bill the patient.
Okay, I only go by that term. That's the only one I know.
Okay.
So we'll call it out of network or whatever, as long as the patient understands or whatever call they made. Now, they wanted this doctor. Obviously, the one doctor says there's nothing we can do. So they go, and I guess that was a preferred provider.
That was a preferred provider. So they knew they had the, they knew
well,
their network.
Well, the one that she knew, and apparently it treated her daughter before she died.
Correct.
So that's why she went there. And then I guess the husband was trying to determine, well, does this other doctor, is it a preferred provider? I guess that's sort of the question he was asking. I'm not sure it would have made any difference. Apparently not, but... He never found that out, and we still don't have, for whatever reason. I know on page 12 of your brief, you talk about, sending a remand out of network would be a useless formality, I guess, because if it goes back, you're going to find out it's not a preferred provider. I guess that's what we would find out, isn't it?
Correct, and that's something that was a new argument that was raised,
well,
and we said
that,
it was waived.
It is kind of weird that it's not in the record here with all that.
But the decision was made.
I understand why they made the decision and everything else, but it would just be helpful to know that it would have been a futile effort.
Well, in his deposition, Johnny Anthony, who was represented for CONSER, said that this hospital, Rush, was actually in network for the PPO plan. And just to clarify what Your Honor said before, he did not call and say, is this in-network or out-network? He called to approve the certification. Those are two distinct issues. And that's what's different than the Bowerman-Kenseth cases. And as the district court correctly ruled, in our opinion, that it would be of no consequence, as you mentioned before, Your Honor, that simply if they were told it was out-of-network at that time, what would be the consequence? They would leave the hospital? The procedure had already commenced. And ultimately, if I can finish this point, we do not believe that it is our affirmative duty to remind people that somebody is in or out of network. That's not what that call is made for. The call that was made was for certification, which is entirely different than what we find in Kenseth, Bowerman, Anweiler, and all the Chonaki, Fromm. Those are all cases that show that information that was given during that phone call was misleading or somehow ultimate information that led to the harm. And in this case, that harm that's being alleged are the medical bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Thorne.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Renee Thorne, and I represent the Royal Defendants. Because Mr. Farivar addressed primarily the claims that were asserted against all of the defendants, I'll limit my comments to the claims that were addressed only to the Royal Defendants individually, and I'd like to speak to some of the you guys asked questions about in the beginning, and I'll try to comment on those. I think that confusion about the penalty claim stems from the plaintiffs repeatedly referring back and forth between an SPD, a network provider list, a group policy, a failure to respond to a document request, a breach of fiduciary duty claim, and his claims have morphed over time as the district court has made different rulings. As the court is well aware, a penalty claim under Section 502 of ERISA can only be imposed where a plan administrator fails to respond within 30 days to a written request for documents. So to the extent that the claim is based on the network provider list, it simply would not apply here to the penalty claim because a network provider list, as the district court found correctly early in the litigation, is not within the documents that are required to be produced under Section 104B of ERISA. So there can't be a penalty for the failure to provide the network provider list in response to a document request. What the court did was found that the imposition of a modest penalty of $10 a day was appropriate because the court found that taken together, the certificate of insurance and the employee benefit summary did not have all of the requirements under ERISA for an SPD. And so for that...
And nobody's contesting that.
That is correct.
Right.
Right.
Now, what remains is this sort of hanging matter of whether there was a request for a copy of the policy made and whether a statutory penalty should attach to that failure to produce, as distinct from the failure to produce documents complying with ERISA's definition of a summary plan description.
Correct. The court found that the Royal defendants had not responded to the, could not have responded to the document request with respect to the SPD because he found that the SPD was non-sufficient. What we called the SPD was non-sufficient.
Right. What about the separate issue of the policy?
Admittedly, the record is confusing here.
Right.
In the ruling that you referenced, the court denied the summary judgment on the penalty claim related to the summary plan description because the deficiencies that he found. And found that the alleged failure to provide the group policy was still in play. But then he said parties submit briefs related to the amount of the penalty regarding the SPD. Now, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because the plaintiff raised the issue again regarding the group policy in his briefs. But he does have a procedural waiver here. He never moved on the group policy. It's his burden to ultimately prove on the group policy, and all he did was mention it in passing in a brief to the court. On the merits of the group policy, however, it's very important. What he complains about is not that he didn't get the group policy and not that he didn't get it timely in response to a document request, but that it was unsigned. That type of technical failure, even if that's considered a technical failure, does not warrant the imposition of penalties.
Okay, so we don't have a ruling on the violation, much less the imposition of penalties, because the plaintiff never asked for one.
That's correct.
Okay.
And now, a brief mention again with respect to a breach of fiduciary duty claim. It's unclear what the basis for the breach of fiduciary duty claim is, but to the extent that it is now based on a retroactive or view with hindsight of the deficient SPD, it wouldn't have mattered in any event because the plaintiff's testimony was clear. He stated, literally, it would not have mattered whether it had that list because we were going to make the decisions that we made without regard to the list. And one final technical issue. The plaintiff suggests that the member provider list needed to be supplied to the plaintiff from the get-go, and he cites the regulations, but that's not what the regulations say. The regulations, in fact, say that the provider list can be provided separately as long as the participants are notified of the general description of the provider network and that the list are furnished automatically. In fact, the certificate of insurance at page 4 specifically tells the participants all they have to do is go to the internet to get the list of providers. This is the most efficient way to provide the list of providers because if you give it out in hard copy form, physicians come on and off the networks all the time. It would never be updated. So the list was available at all times.
All right, thank you. Mr. Shannon, your time had expired, but I'll give you a minute for a quick rebuttal.
Very quickly, with respect to whether we ever asked for this group policy, if you simply look at our request for relief in our brief in connection with the statutory penalties, I believe that's 296-1. I'm quite certain we asked for separate awards for the plan and the group policy, and we stated the facts supporting that. This last idea that there was no list, but you can get it on the Internet, they had a contractual obligation to provide a list of providers when coverage became effective, and they had a statutory obligation to provide an SPD, which must include a statement regarding the composition of the network providers. The Department of Labor has always insisted on a paper list. A hard copy. You can go to the internet. I don't know of there is no proof whatsoever of anything that was available on the internet. We don't know what is on there. There is nothing in the record to support the claim that there's something available on the internet. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.